Now we move to the second part of our event here, which is opening up to questions and answers. If anybody has to be on their way, please take this opportunity now to move out. And so, who has the first question?
Thank you, Rebecca, for a wonderful discussion and all the work you do. And by the way, I, with many Canadians, are very disappointed in this decision on the weekend and share a bit of the sadness. Yeah. Two questions. The first is that 70% dropout rate at post-secondary. Mm-hmm. What would you consider to be the greatest root cause of that 70%? I appreciate the STEAM Academy and the things you're doing to address it. But what do you think is the biggest issue?
I think the 70% dropout was actually at the high school, but it's the same things happening at post-secondary too. There are a number of things, and the students tell us this directly. It's racism from the other students. It's racism from some of the faculty, the teachers, not being academically prepared. Not being acknowledged as even being acknowledged as an Indigenous person, but kind of being just ignored, invisible, marginalized. I think those are probably being disengaged and just being demoralized is probably...
Okay.
Yeah.
And my second question is, you're in Southern Ontario. Mm-hmm. You look at your brethren in Northern Ontario who are very remote from universities,
yes,
or anything. They have a greater problem, obviously. Mm-hmm. Have you seen, I do a lot of work with a particular Pikangikum up in Northern Ontario. Problem is getting the kids out of the community to attend post-secondary.
Yep.
Have you seen any work done with distance learning?
We're trying. Some of the institutions in the north do a bit of blended and distance learning. But as you know, the infrastructure deemed to the community is the issue. You know, sometimes we can have delivery points. All the institutions, there's one in Kenora, one in Thunder Bay, one in Sault Ste. Marie, one in North Bay. They can be delivery points. And sometimes there's nursing stations that they can send distance learning in. But it's not a reliable system. And so they do a combination of fly-in to a node and then back out. But it is a hugely different world there, and big, big challenges. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Hi. I think I've seen your name associated with Inspire. Am I right?
No. No,
okay.
That's not me.
Okay. Sorry.
I want to clarify, there are two Jamesons floating out there in the world, and one is Roberta Jameson, who heads up Inspire, and there's Rebecca. Mm-hmm. Today we have Rebecca.
Thanks very much for the valuable information today. With the work that's been done in the sort of collecting the history of the Indigenous people for your programs, is there any talk with the partners within Ministry of Education of actually sharing that kind of Indigenous history to make it part of Canadian history in the public school system?
There's been a lot of talk. Our institutions haven't been directly involved, I'll say that, or have been involved at a very limited level. It seems that once the awareness is there that there's information lacking, that people prefer to do their own internal problem solving rather than reaching out and working. I'm hoping that's going to change, but yeah, that's what's happening.
Have you done a lot of work?
Yeah. We find more openness around knowledge mobilization within the post-secondary sector. Yeah. But I know, I was trained as an elementary teacher, and to be told, now it's part of the curriculum, you're going to teach these units, and they don't know, you know? So we have offered up to the school boards, we can do sessions with your teachers. We can do PD days. We can do the AQ courses. You know, so we're putting it out there, waiting for the uptake. Yeah.
Thank you, Rebecca. Very nice again to listen to your words. I'm inspired by your work being embedded in Indigenous education policy work. I follow what you do, and most recently you hosted the World Indigenous Education Youth Conference, where you had representation from all around the world. They must be just a handful of people around the world who are doing the kind of work you're doing. We came into this neighborhood about 8 years ago, and my daughter went through the public school system here. I guess it's a bit of a statement and a bit of a question. Of course, growing up in the household, she is constantly embedded herself in First Nations education issues. So she struggled how through the schooling, only in the last 2 years that there was actually a recognition in the curriculum and a change in the acknowledgement in the morning, in the prayer, and so on. But she struggled how there was skepticism, there was racism, there was even a snigger, and that would make her rile every time there was a traditional acknowledgement. Now she's in university, and the first thing she said, "Mama, we had the traditional acknowledgement, and everybody stood up and bowed their head down." So things have changed, luckily. But, you know, Ministry of Education 10 years ago came up with the education framework for the First Nation, Métis, and Inuit. Nothing has changed. I just finished studying the impacts. Of course, there are cultural events, there are powwows and school boards around. But the Indigenous leads itself, quite a few of them are not Indigenous.
I know.
So language is not there.
I know.
There is no language. Everybody is learning French.
Yeah.
So there are constitutional gaps. There are legislative gaps, which are impacting just education. Forget so many other things. If in a neighborhood like this, where it houses the movers and shakers of Bay Street, Queen's Park, Ottawa, what is it that is a call to action to us? To the grandparents, to the parents, to the... What one thing should we do tomorrow?
I would ask that you encourage within your circle of influence to give courage to the politicians who make decisions about policy, to invest in the structural and systemic change that our institutions can make in particular, and to not try to maintain the status quo, just have us there as an appendage, but to actually, you know, the French university was announced in December. Good, I'm great, finally, you know? But where is the Indigenous university for the First Peoples of the land? You know, and it seems, yeah.
$3 billion are spent for French language in the country.
I know.
And there are about 10 legislative acts that protect the funding. And
There's a lot of discussion about will there be language legislation? And anytime you talk about legislation, there's always distrust about somebody's going to try and define what we can do as opposed to our self-determining decisions. So, but I think there's a general consensus that our languages need to be acknowledged as languages of the nation and need to be funded in that way, because only then will they be supported with a hope of survival. It's happened in New Zealand, it's happened in Hawaii, you know, it can happen. So encourage those people who make the policy decisions, please.
Documentary in Canada?
I'm not familiar with it. No.
We Canada. The documentary.
No, I'm not. No, I don't know it. Sorry.
Oh, about Indigenous people. I was wondering. Mm. Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Yes, I don't understand.
We're recording the event. We're recording the event. So could you please?
I don't understand specifically what the Institute at Kenora, for example, would be doing. Mm-hmm. What happens?
I don't want to shortchange seven generations, but I do know that they're focusing more recently on the trades and getting people skilled so they can enter the trades employment area. There was a change in leadership about 4 years ago, academic leadership. Prior to that, the focus was very strongly on Indigenous knowledge and languages. And they offer what we would know in English as a master's degree in their culture. So you can take that there if you so wish. So they run the range somewhat like us, post-secondary to training, and I do believe they have a literacy as well. Literacy program.
So did they go there after high school?
Yes. Yeah. I think that they also run a high school program. It's not like our STEAM program, but they run a high school program as well. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It was an extraordinary talk. Thank you very much for it. You emphasized in the SNC that you teach native languages. Mm-hmm. And is there any possibility of broadening that so that in across the country in every, I won't call them reserves, I think that's an insult, but in native mm-hmm. communities, mm-hmm. that the people are taught in their own language, because language is the basis of culture and so is territory. Mm-hmm. Without the language, you will not have the mm-hmm. culture. But it's also rooted in territory. And, you know, is there any vision of teaching the native languages in the communities with a view of people remaining in the communities? And a sub question there is that the communities be economically sustainable. Mm-hmm. And I suppose the long-term vision is in the cities themselves, that we could have high schools, secondary schools, which would teach native languages. Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's my question.
Well, the language, I call it the language revitalization movement, is national. It's happening at different speeds and in different capacities across the country. So some of the... we're the only standalone Indigenous institute that does it. There are mainstream institutions, especially out west in BC, where there's more Indigenous involvement in the university, where they're looking at languages. I don't think they've started a language council. I don't want to say the name, but there are across the country. Language revitalization is happening, whether it happens in a community or whether it happens... it might happen in a city, like somebody might book a room in, say, Kingston and go there for language classes and people would come to it like that. So distributed learning, it's happening at every level across the country. In the cities, I think that you'll find them, it's going to be offered informally through places like friendship centers. You know, you'll be able to find classes there. But at the post-secondary level, not so much across the country. In the high schools, we have challenges in the high schools. Language, Indigenous language, is an option on the books in Ontario. But most often the high schools, the boards of education are challenged to get an Indigenous language teacher. And sometimes they'll get someone who... isn't really a speaker to teach, but sometimes they'll get somebody from the community to do it. They can do that on a letter of permission. I know also that we have just recently talked to our local board of education, and I offered to them the solution. I said, you know what, we can offer the high school credit at night in the community. you know, they have to deal with their federations and those kinds of things. So I know, I understand that you have things you have to deal with, but we can offer it if you want to agree to something like that. So this is where our institutions can become helpful, but it's a scarcity of people. Yeah. Don't make it hard, Delia.
That was absolutely wonderful, Rebecca.
Thank you.
It was just a wonderful presentation. Just this question. As you know, there's going to be an Indigenous Languages Act. It's going to be tabled in June by the Government of Canada. The whole language revitalization movement, which Rebecca has really taken a lead on, is going on across Canada. And for that reason, it was one of the major issues that the Assembly of First Nations pushed for. And so there is going to be an Indigenous Languages Act introduced in Parliament probably in June. They're in the middle of doing the drafting in the meetings right now. My question to you is, and it's not going to be difficult, it's to do with the fact that it sounds as if you're actually creating curriculum. Mm-hmm. With the work that you're doing, with the traditional knowledge that mm-hmm. you're gathering. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've done all of your proper protocols on it. But in respect to, with the law, have you worked, like have you received an opinion or do you have something on intellectual property rights in protecting at least the framework into that data that you're gathering? The data itself, I don't think, can be protected, but at least the framework into mm-hmm. that. And just one more point. I'm from Saskatchewan, and as Rebecca said, our communities in Saskatchewan are grieving with what happened with mm-hmm. Mr. Bush. And it's the whole issue of jury selection is the center of that mm-hmm. issue, the peremptory challenges that the defense and the Crown can use. My thinking about that is that it's very important, I think, as Murray says in his email that you read, that that issue has to be changed, that law has to be changed, allowing for challenges without cause. There has to be a reason why you're challenged. So I think that would do away with racism itself. However, it's my position that being on a jury is very unpopular. People want to get out of it because it's not attractive. People lose their jobs, people, mm-hmm. family issues. So something has to be done. I think if there's going to be changes, and it sounds as if there may be changes, that issue has to be addressed. And it's not just for Indigenous people, but it's all Canadians.
Yeah. On the intellectual property piece, we have our own draft policy on intellectual property. And as you can understand, Delia, coming from our world and understanding that there's that whole piece around the collective knowledge that is shared by everyone, and then looking at the framework, how you structure it and so on, we haven't actually copyrighted anything. We ask people to be respectful and to acknowledge what we have. And so that's where, so maybe you and I need to talk. But yeah, because we're very sensitive about, you can't sell your culture, right? You know, so it's collectively owned.
Thank you again for a wonderful talk. My question is this. I have full confidence that you will succeed in having Six Nations Polytechnic recognized as a standalone university, and I wish you all the best with that. What are your best hopes for Six Nations Polytechnic once it does become a university?
Well, and I can speak to maybe the next 10 to 20 year sort of picture, as we talk about it all the time. We have some specific degrees that we want to offer. We're developing what we call the Indigenous sustainability, but it's not necessarily environmental sustainability. its cultural sustainability, and its applying Indigenous knowledge to challenges that we face globally. So that's one of the big sort of big things that we see that we can do, and we can share that across. I think for Six Nations Polytechnic, as the Indigenous University of Ontario, our responsibility is to work with other Indigenous peoples and nations and institutes to help them to achieve what they see themselves able to do. So we're willing to do whatever we can in that way and continue to work with our partners as well, because we know that together we all have to live here. So we'll just keep doing what we're doing in a better way, in a bigger way. Thank you.
Hello. I have just a little bit of information about language classes here in Toronto.
Oh, good.
First of all, the Toronto Public School Board does have a First Nations school just off the Danforth, and it's been an elementary school for years, but they're expanding now to cover K-12. So they of course, teach Indigenous languages there. And then the University of Toronto has classes in Cayuga, Mohawk, and Ojibwe, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. But I had a question about SNP, and that's, are there residential facilities there if, let's say, an Indigenous youth from Toronto would like to attend? Are there residential facilities?
Not yet. We're doing a feasibility for small residents at the Six Nations campus, because that's the campus where people will want to come for the degree. And so right now, we've been able to have, usually there are people coming from other Haudenosaunee communities or families. They usually have extended family in the community that they live with. And so we've been able to do that. We have had a student come from Calgary, and we are part of the housing network in the city of Brantford, and they have a housing service. So we were able to find her a place and then shuttle her back and forth to the campus, make sure she was safe and got to school on time. And she has since graduated and gone on. So we're stepping toward the more full-time residents. Not that we want to be, you know, house mothers or anything like that, but we'll figure out a way so that people can be housed in a safe way. Yeah. I know. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Glendon College has a course in Ojibwe.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's a bilingual college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, any more questions? Okay, with that, I'll ask Jim to come and thank Rebecca.
Rebecca, just before I do that, because this is the last of our 2017 and 18 series, which has been a marvelous experience from beginning to end, and the standard only rose in this concluding session. But I do want to thank the people who have supported this program, and we have a pretty good number out today, and we have for all of our sessions, and the quality of questions and discussion is a reflection of the kinds of people who have found their way here and made this a significant forum of current issues. We had then Commissioner Murray St. Clair here a year and a half ago, and shortly after the release of the report, and it was pretty clear, at least from what I remember his say, that the future is not going to be defined, or the changes aren't going to be made with the mouthing of platitudes. And it's going to involve some significant transformations, and some will begin within our own cranial cavities, of course, as we rethink and revisit who we are as a nation. And the sessions this year have reflected on that, going back to Peter Russell and others. But you have also shown that in a practical sense, on the ground, skill acquisition, self-worth acquisition, and becoming an agent of change is something that doesn't happen with pleasant thoughts, but with organizations such as yours. And we are a wonderful presentation. We're grateful for your coming here and honoring us. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a very appreciative audience.
Well, thank you very much for your kind attention, and I'll make sure I tell the students that you receive them well.